Right, welcome to episode 25 of the Back to Front show. Showing up, being consistent, yes, all of those.
Checking in,
we are back. If you listen to episode 24, if you didn't, what's your excuse? I don't know.
Ridiculous.
What's going on there? Maybe iTunes broke or something. Maybe you didn't get it in your podcaster of choice.
Yes, our 40 minutes or 50 minutes of excuses.
Well, it was only about 5 minutes. It's only about 5 minutes of excuses, but we're showing up, we're giving value, and it's all good. But this is the Link Show, in case you were wondering. For long-time listeners, for both of you out there, you will know that in the past we have done a sort of roundup around the web, some sort of links and some sort of chat about those, and then more of a discussion point. But we decided to...
Which is in no way a rip-off of Dignation.
Well, you apparently... I've never seen or heard of this Dignation. Is it something from the annals of...
It's something from the annals of the past.
That web people web would history.
Like to come back, yes.
Did you have a Dignation hoodie?
I may have had a Dig hoodie.
Oh, was it Dig hoodie? Did they do Dignation?
I never did a Dignation hoodie, but I was thrown a Dig hoodie.
Where?
FOA 2000 and something.
Which one? Which one did you go to?
Seven, I think. Is it
Seven? Was that in Kensington?
Yes.
Oh, no, it was
no.
Docklands.
It was Docklands, yeah.
I didn't go to that one. I didn't go to that one. I was with child.
Right.
But as in my daughter.
Had just been born.
So, yes, I wasn't allowed out. Oh, sorry, yes. I made the conscious decision.
to
stay at home. And I was very close. You know, I lived in Docklands at the time. So, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
However, I was in 2008 at the Dignation there. Were you at that one?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember which one I was at. I think it was 2007.
It was quite scary. I mean, the level of fandom for Dignation was quite scary. 2008, there were literally 12-year-old kids with their parents banging on the shutters to get in. And this to me is like, you know, the guy who wanted to meet, you know, rock and roll stars when I was 12, and you just would never have happened.
You meet startup founders now.
Yeah. Oh, he's back, isn't he? Talking
he's
of
back. North
at Kevin Rose is back with the
n-o-r-t-h.com. yeah.
So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. He's got a part-time job at Google,
yeah,
and he'll be back.
So basically he's on Google salary, then they'll buy North back from him.
It's mere speculation, Kieran Masterton.
Just churning money, that's what it is. Money goes in, money comes out. When he goes in, that's how Alcoholy makes money.
Yep, absolutely. But we've got three choice links each, as always. And I'm going to kick off. And this is, this is interesting. So we've talked about editorially before.
In great detail, and its competitors.
And there was an announcement, and it may have been as far back as one of our previous shows, where they announced that the service was for the scrap heap. I mean, sorry, was being shut down.
Being canned, yeah.
Which was, you know, a bit of a shock at the time, actually, because I thought, you know, it was getting a lot of, you know, great reviews. It was obviously helping a lot of people with that sort of editorial process.
Yep.
And had a team behind it that was kind of, you know, Harlem Globetrotters of the web, really. It was full of tall web developers. But, you know, Jason Santamaria, Mandy Brown, Ethan Marcotte, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a shock that they were going to shut down. But, I came kind of out of the blue. I was sort of catching up on news, and I clicked on Mandy's Twitter profile as I was researching how people represent themselves, and it said she was at Vox Media. I was like, oh, hold on a minute, let me backtrack. And it turns out that Vox actually kind of did an acquihire of
This has been quiet, hasn't it?
I think
low key. I was talking to some people in the know.
Yeah.
Neil Kinnish. And
you know,
we don't get anybody with the finger on the pulse more.
I mean, he man lives for this.
This is
his bread and butter.
It is. He's all over this. It's just web gossip and startup shenanigans.
It's like, not Valleywag. What would he be? Kind of like Rural Wag.
Welsh Borders Wag.
Welsh Borders Wag or Shropshire Wag.
Brum Wag. Anyway.
Bum Wag?
Brum.
Oh, Brum. Sorry.
Birmingham. Oh. Anyway, so he was unaware of this as well. And
well, so it's nice to get one over on the Knish, isn't it, in the gossip
section?
It is,
yeah. You know, you don't often That's get an nice. Opportunity to do that.
No.
anyway, I think it's been very quiet. There's not been much talk of this.
No, I agree. I mean, there's a post, and we'll again link this up on the hopefully the blog will stay around. step.editorially.com/articles/editorially joins Vox Media. Mm. It doesn't look like they've aquahired the whole team. I think I certainly
just the founders. Is that
yeah? It looks that way. I'm not sure if Ethan's involved. But yeah, certainly Mandy's there, and I noticed Jason's, I think, gone there now. It does say here three of them.
Yeah, three of them. Yeah.
Three of us are joining the product team at Vox Media. So I think that's, you know, that it's Mandy Brown, David Yee, and Jason Santamaria.
Right, so not Ethan.
So they're working on the next step in the evolution of the Vox platform called Chorus. Now, Vox is a really interesting company, and their site is. Some really fascinating stuff on sort of news and news online and publishing and so forth. And I apologize now in advance. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but someone at Smashing Conf earlier this year, who works on The Verge, talked about how they, the tech behind the way that they sort of editorially create, posts, you know, especially the ones that are very much involved. It's not cookie cutter, articles, you know, hero, box out, you know, quote, yeah. etc. Very, very clever. There's obviously some very, very clever people working there. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes. What I thought most of interest in many ways in the articles was them talking about the technology behind editorially. They're actually, whilst Vox has acquired the rights to editorially, in the tech sense, none of the data will be transferred across, and they won't
that's be sort of made available for download, hasn't it? And
yeah,
I'm almost certain this is about people.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah,
the team, but it's also probably about the technology being woven into Vox's CMS in some way.
Yeah, I think so. And as they say in the post, you know, the editorial service will not return, but they hopefully be able to make some of the technology and some of the advancements that they made with that tech maybe available as open source and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, real interesting. So
it's not really Vox Media saves editorial. I don't think it's that angle at all. It's more that it just that's why it wasn't a big announcement, I think.
Yeah, I think you see this a lot, don't you, with people they sort of demo their knowledge, and not that these people really needed to.
No.
You know, they founded a successful book company and a book apart and loads of other stuff.
Tons of stuff before that.
But obviously this captured the eyes of Vox and the bringing that knowledge on board. Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting. You know, we've talked about it before. It's a shame that the service, which we both used, has gone away. But, I mean, it was a crowded market. You're up against Google Docs and things like that. And maybe, you know, we've talked again about sort of VC and how, you know, the expectation is so high. Maybe, you know, had they not gone down that route, maybe it would still be here in a different form. I don't know. But anyway, so it looks like they're going on.
Too high, that's the truth of it. You know, in terms of VC, if you can't build you can't build a multi-billion dollar company, especially in the States with preference shares and everything, it really isn't worth it for them. So, you know, I think that's why things like editorially close so abruptly.
Yeah,
because if they don't see that traction, they don't see you building the value, quote unquote, in the Silicon Valley sense of the term. You get shut down.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting. I've definitely been as a result of that article looked a lot more around Vox. You'll know them from The Verge. You'll know them from various other things. They've got this clever thing called, you know, card stacks, where you can go through and there's like, you know, related articles that they put together in a nice sort of easy to use interface. So yeah, definitely check it out. I think vox.com, and just, you know, learn a little bit more about what they're doing. It'd be interesting to see you know, how Jason and Mandy and the others influence that over time. But So my second one, this was funny. This made me laugh. I thought it was tongue in cheek at first, but actually no, it's not serious. Did you have a chance to read this? The 10 yeah. things you should do when you have your next web idea.
And yeah, I think I saw that, yeah.
I think we're guilty of all of these. So
obviously.
Yeah. So quick rundown. This is over on SitePoint, SitePoint.com, 10 things need next web idea. And first one, choose a name. That's it. You've got to start with the name,
you
right?
You always choose four names, don't you? That's the thing. There's always four or five names kicking around in your head when you have all these ideas.
Yeah, this is true.
They managed to four domains, which is the next one.
And then a year later, you go, do you still want me to renew those domains? It's going to cost me 50 quid. you know, it's like...
Not that we've just had that conversation.
The anger in the text comes through. It's like, am I renewing these domains or not?
Or not.
Yeah. So that's the second one. So you register the domain, you set up all the social media accounts, been there, done that. Uh-huh. I think basically we've stopped at two. Had we carried on, they recommend here making a coming soon static site.
No, I've gone there.
Yeah, you've done that?
Yeah, I've gone there.
And they tell us a few things. Jekyll, give Jekyll a try. Various other things. There are services now, aren't there, out there that just basically cater for this.
Yeah.
They know you're never going to get to number four, but they're going to take that £10 a month off you to have your sort of coming soon.
Yeah.
Give me a sign up. Capture those potential users, which is actually step four.
Step four: sign up BT users and referral marketing.
Yeah, yeah. There's apps for that now as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can use a service called Profinery to sign up BT users, even with a static site.
Right.
Again, why did we stop? I mean, I think we probably got to 2.5 with some of our ideas.
Yeah, but I think the thing is that a lot of these ideas happen while sitting in a coffee shop getting rather excited over a flat white, and then you realise the limitations of your idea, perhaps. There's always a domain purchased, always.
The cold light of day kicks in. The flat white's gone cold. It's the cold flat white test. We should christen that.
Yeah.
Basically, if the idea is still good while you're sipping a cold flat white, then maybe you should go to point three.
Yeah.
Point five, engage with potential users. Well, I mean, that's me and you.
Yeah.
So, and we're, oh, it says here you can blog on Medium.
Can you?
There you go. That's the validation in the 2014 web app era.
Yeah.
Blog about it on Medium.
You have to assemble a team is the next step.
But I mean, we are the dream team.
We are the team, you know. I mean,
2Ks. Yeah,
suppose you might need a designer, you know, if you feel like it.
No, really, no. Design?
No,
I don't know.
Go on Fiverr.
True, it's all good. Seven, register for business emails. Well, that kind of goes with the domain, doesn't it? But we never really got that far. Eight, research. Oh, I like this. Eight. So only at point eight, having done all this other stuff, do you actually research potential competition?
No, that's ridiculous.
That's like 15. You don't worry about competitions. Surely.
No, of course you don't. That's the first thing you do.
No.
You said, had an idea. It's Instagram meets...
Dogs.
Whatever. Dogs, yeah. It's Insta-dogs. And you go all, straight up, pick up the iPhone, Insta-dogs, start looking through, and you're like, oh... expletive because Kier won't let me swear. It already exists.
You realise that Neil Kinnish is actually building it.
You see, I was always so close to reality that I always said, is he?
I know. Yeah, no, I mean, I'd argue that again, though, we've gone down this route and only at point, you know, 15, and this is only a 10-point list, have researched the competition.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe.
Ultra minimal viable product is the next one, number nine.
See, the MVP.
Yeah, and then they sort of cop out at the end by saying number 10 is beyond the MVP. Yeah. So they don't quite follow through, to be honest.
I mean,
can you find mentors and partners? Are you sure this isn't tongue-in-cheek?
No, because it says here this is
a list of buzzwords.
The author is an optimist and carries an umbrella.
Well, there's a bio for you from last week's show.
Yeah, so I think this is all true. I think this is all true. Good advice. I mean, I mean, you know, joking aside,
for
15 seconds, it is good advice. But really? I would argue that the research potential competition should come higher up. But that shouldn't put you off, because at least you know, the argument goes that if someone else is doing it, you've got a benchmark, you've got something to differentiate yourself against.
There's something about this that reminds me of sort of the five stages of grief or whatever it is. Yeah. Or the three stages of denial.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the... I like it. I think it's
you
food,
like it, yeah?
Food for thought.
I'm not convinced.
Food for thought. Register for business emails. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah. Next right. time we have a... We'll do the flat white test. I'm gonna refer you back to this.
Yeah.
Because you are the master of buying the domain before we've even got the idea.
Well, that's nothing wrong with that.
No.
It's $11.99 well spent.
Well, it would be. The best $11.99 you spent was kieranmasterson.com. I'm not sure about all the others.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
I probably paid about £100 for that because I registered it in 1996 or something.
I know, that's the thing, right? Do you know I didn't have kieranmasterson.com for when I started doing stuff. It was .net. I had .net. Yeah, no idea why.
Schoolboy error.
But
do you still have that domain?
No.
Who is in it now?
No, I don't know.
No?
No.
Someone else got it.
I'm .com all the way now.
No, it's available for register. Anybody out there who wants kieranmasterson.net, off you go.
Thanks, mate.
It's all right. What's your next one?
Well, after the high of knowing how to build my next startup, I followed all 10 points and I'm now at the funding stage.
Right.
And this next one does relate to that. It's actually really, really good infographic.
Are you just feeding the bubble with this stuff?
But we can burst it next week. It's fine. You know, I like building, family businesses, profitable. Yeah. Buy something at X, sell it at Y. You know, that's where I'm at. But actually, this, as we do move, in these circles in a way, this, the next piece over on Ink, ink.com. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Big fan of Ink. Actually subscribed to the magazine, the Dead Tree version.
Right.
Gets delivered to the UK now, which is great. They've somehow managed to...
To realise that Europe exists.
Europe exists and, yeah.
But, I have to say that the reading experience sometimes on Ink is on their website is almost impossible with like popovers and all that kind of stuff. But for some reason, I haven't got them this time, which is good.
Just so you know, if you put your email address in the pop-ups, they go away.
Yeah, but then I get inundated with crap from them.
Well, yeah.
Anyway,
so this
how
is
how startup funding works.
So this is a bit of a mystery to me over the years, and I still don't fully claim to understand it. But with the aid of an infographic, by Anna Vital,
sorted.
I'm well on the way to having a better comprehension of this stuff. Essentially, it is a pictorial form of how you can start off at the idea stage as the founder, owning 100% of your company. And at the end of it, you have an office at the top of the Empire State Building and own 17.6%, and your uncle's got
2.4%. This is just throwing petrol on the bubble now.
I don't know what you mean. But, so
I can't believe you're promoting this infographic.
But it's beautiful.
It's pretty, but it's... Just, playing into every single person's fantasy about becoming the next, Biz Stone.
The person at the top of the Empire State does look a lot like Neil Kinnish as well. It's pretty funny. But,
what does it say? It says, there's an idea stage, a co-founder stage, and then there's a family and friends funding stage. You see, I haven't come across this. Normally, that's sort of, that would, to me, be the seed round or the angel round.
Yeah, I think family and friends can often be the angel. So, basically, let me count, six stages here. You've got the idea stage, where you own 100% of the idea and obviously of the company if you've incorporated in some form. Got the co-founder stage where you then split that.
Or the Raman stage, as it's known.
It's a Raman stage, yeah. and then you got the family and friends. So this is where for nominal investments, they've got someone's uncle's come in at 5%. And then what
normally,
they've done...
Normally a dentist.
Is that true?
Yeah, normally.
But then at this point, they've created an option pool, so they've set stock aside for future employees.
Yeah.
And then the seed round is where they've actually got angels coming in there. So that's where you've got the seed round is the angel investors. And I think they further down in the article, they do reference, what these terms are. So, family and friends invest before anyone else at the lowest price. So they have a valuation, their stock will be worth X at that point.
Yeah.
It may well get diluted at a later point, but will obviously be worth more as the valuation increases. So, 4% of a million is better. And then 2% of 10 million is obviously greater.
Yeah.
Then they talk about sort of the angel round. And this is where, say, the option pool is decreased slightly.
Yeah.
And then the VCs come in. And that's when it kind of all gets...
That's when it all goes.
The pie gets broken up even more.
Yeah.
Right through to the IPO, the initial public offering, where at that point anyone can...
They're thinking big here.
Anyone can become...
Facebook.
An investor. So it charts the course from owning 100% right down to 17.6%, but gone from a $15,000 idea through to a 2.6 billion valuation. So
I think would be a better infographic or chart or whatever.
I don't think either of us could do a better infographic than this.
No. What I think would be better, would be more useful to people, would maybe be to be about percentages and what's normal. Because one of the conversations I have a lot with people in startups is this idea that they either don't want to give anything away. It's the dragon's den syndrome. I want £500,000 for 4% of my company. What's your turnover? £6,000. That's the issue. It's this sort of like the bubble is caused by people thinking that their company's worth £2 million when in fact it's worth nothing. And I think that a more useful chart would be to say, well, it is reasonable that you are going to give away X percentage of your company to angels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is reasonable that you're going to give X amount of money away to your VCs in Series A, and that you are going to end up with percentages in the teens, not in the 60 percentile.
Yeah.
I think there's this sort of false sense of we have to keep hold of 51% of the company, which just doesn't happen.
Exactly, yeah.
So I mean, it is an interesting chart from that point of view, but it would be more interesting to keep it focused on what to expect.
Yeah, what's normal.
What's normal, yeah. You're not being fleeced here, because the whole idea is the valuation of your company increases as your percentage goes down, so you're still, in line for a lot of money if everything goes well.
Yeah, just doing the basic maths here, I think the two founders, as per this diagram, 35. They got 35.2% of the pie, so that would be a controlling vote, I guess.
Yeah.
Especially if they keep their uncle on side with that extra 2.4. So but I think, there's a lot of these terms bandied around, Series A, Series B.
Don't necessarily need to follow the percentage you own in the company.
Also true. We need a voting rights infographic. But yeah, definitely check it out. It's worth a look, just to get your head around all the different fingers in the pie and what kind of journey you might go on. So yeah, interesting stuff. But that was me.
Nice.
What about you?
So, as usual, I'm taking us off in a direction, something not related to the web, but actually it does relate to the web, because I will bring it back to that. This is the news that Disney engineers have invented an algorithm that automatically edits multicam footage.
Go on.
So basically, this is an article on nofilmschool.com, which is a great website for people who... didn't go to film school but want to learn a lot about film, and they have written an article about how engineers at Disney have created an algorithm that basically acts as the editor and pieces together, let's say you've got a sporting event, for example, and you've got multiple cameras on the same sports person and the ball moves between these sports people, and the multiple cameras capture all the angles. It pieces together that footage and cuts it for the best possible result for the viewer.
Just on its own.
On its own, yeah.
Wow.
Now, that's, you know, there's a lot of problems with that, and especially and the article talks about, you know, God forbid this would start being used for narrative filmmaking, because that sort of takes all the art out of the storytelling, etc. But what I found it interesting for was, and it's very often that thing of, it's been invented for one purpose, but it actually might be interesting for another, is the idea of people all submitting footage from a particular event. Now, whether that's a news event, or whether that's a whether that's a sporting event, or marathon, or whatever, and then online being able to piece that together into some sort of edit from everybody, and to tell a story algorithmically, I think that's quite interesting. So it's definitely worth a read if you're interested in that sort of, you know, I was going to say artificial intelligence, is not really that, it's sort of machine storytelling.
Be good, you know, for the police with CCTV.
Yeah, well, yeah, that kind of thing.
That's interesting. So what was their motivation to build this?
I'm not sure they don't really go into that. You know, that's always a strange thing that Disney would do this. But then Disney are part of a much bigger corporation who... and it may be for quick edits. You know, one of the things that that's... You know, the rough cut or the dailies cut that the sort of junior editors do for directors to see the day's footage be cut together. And it may also be useful for animators. You know, they animate specific scenes, and then this thing could cut them together very quickly, just so people can see them, you know, see the progression of the story.
Mm.
So those kind of things are probably good uses. But they're also, Disney are part of what's it called? News Corp, Murdoch, etc., aren't they?
Are they?
I think so, aren't they?
No, surely not. Really?
Or are Disney separate to all that? Hang on a second.
Well, if you don't know, I don't know.
No, I don't know.
No, Disney are Disney, aren't they, I thought?
I think they might be. Let me see. I thought they were part of a bigger corporation. Anyway, this isn't very interesting.
Silence.
Silence on a podcast.
Yes, it's something we do very well.
It's always good.
But yeah, that's it looks very impressive. There's footage of the actual edit available there. There's a little YouTube embed, isn't there, as well?
Yes, yeah, of the edit that's produced. So it's interesting stuff. Actually, I think Disney are just Disney. My apologies for that. Accusing them of being part of the Murdoch Empire. Anyway,
you heard it here first.
Heard it here first. Breaking merger plans.
Yeah, I mean, I this kind of tech just flabbergasts me, really. I mean, how you know?
Yeah, it's incredible.
You wake up and suddenly you know how to create something like that. It's unbelievable, stuff. I can see, yeah, as you say, I think maybe with the prevalence of things like smartphones taking video and that stuff like that, if it gets wrapped up in an app or something, could be really good for people who aren't great filmmakers and just want to sort of
just want edit of their kids, you know, sports day or their whatever, and it just does it for you. It's quite nice. But I also think the cloud capabilities of this are quite interesting as well. If people submit video, and then you can see a Vine or a, you know, that kind of thing where it's a sort of quick 5-minute cut of everybody's footage.
It's interesting you mentioned Vine. I'm not a user of Vine. I'm not sure if you are, but I was listening as I was driving somewhere a week or so ago. It's the start of the British Premiership football season.
Yeah.
And there was an article or news piece about how the Premiership are trying to clamp down on the use of technology such as Vine for showing goals. So they were sort of saying that, and they were talking to a lot of football fans, and they're saying, yeah, you've got a smartphone now, you can be in the stands, and someone will, you know, video a goal, and, you know, it'll be on Vine within 3 or 4 seconds, and you can just sort of follow these relevant people, and you get all the goals from around the grounds.
You don't need a Sky subscription.
And you don't need a Sky subscription or, you know, a BT Sports subscription or anything like this. And it just made me think of how certain, in my opinion, companies don't get it, where you had the head of the Premiership come on, or whoever it was, sort of saying, you know, this is actually illegal, it's copyright material, you know, we'll be clamping down on it. You know, if you do
it's
this,
not because it's, they're not pirating the footage from Sky, are they? They're taking it themselves.
Well, allegedly, you know, it's still, I don't know how, but it's still copyright material. And I just thought, instead of embracing the fact that people are sharing this content and doing, you know, wonderful things with it, you know, they're worried the fact that Sky and BT have paid, you know,
classic,
and The Sun, actually, I think the Sun are involved in this, one of your friends from the Murdoch Empire, because they bought the rights to the goals to show behind a paywall, just the goals, not the full matches. So it's you know, they've monetized goals, and there's this kind of whole thing, well, actually, people in the stands can film them and share them. It's an interesting one. I don't quite know how you get around that, but you know, whether there'll be a test case and they'll, that, you know, some poor football fan will be sent to the clink,
sent to prison, yeah,
for sharing some you know, some very wealthy,
but fined enormously is normally the case, isn't it?
Yeah,
fined, they go bankrupt,
so they can't actually pay, which, you know, anyways,
really helps,
but,
everyone, isn't it?
But anyways, yes,
anyway,
moving on.
So my next two links are kind of similar, and so I'm going to roll them together.
roll them together.
Yay. This so rollout.io is the first one, and I've been kind of interested in these sort of, I guess, dirty solutions is the right word. Like
dirty.
Yeah, you know. You know, things like PhoneGap and Ruby Motion and things like that have always interested me, because I sort of feel like, you know, while developers look down their nose at them, you know, I'm sure the guys that I work with, the CTO at the company I'm working with, or, you know, some of the more purist developers I work with would be laughing at me for talking about these things. I'm not suggesting that they are the best solution to solve these problems, but, you know, things like Ruby Motion have enabled lots of developers who don't know Objective-C or now Swift to build apps for iPhone. I don't know the rights and wrongs of that from a technical perspective, but in terms of executing your idea and making money, they seem pretty good to me. You know, it's kind of the same thing about snobbery about WordPress. Oh, you built your website in WordPress. It's, you know, crap, whatever. It's a mess, you know, use a proper CMS, all that kind of conjecture that goes on around, or rhetoric that goes on around WordPress. It's the same thing with these solutions, I think. It's just about getting an idea to market, you know?
No, I agree fully with that. I think I've, you know, my opinion on that has changed over the years. I'm much more interested in the end result as opposed to the process and the tools. I think, you know, that's, for me, so yeah, I use WordPress. I really like WordPress. I think if you know it relatively well and you have a decent coding standard, you can achieve amazing stuff with custom post type. Anyway, we've talked all about that before, but
anyway, this, so I'm not saying that, you know, if I was founding a company and it was an iOS company, that I would use something like Ruby Motion. I would probably get a native developer to build it, because, you know, I'd see the value in doing that for long term. But if you don't have investment and you're a Ruby developer and you want to build something on the iPhone, then I think that's a perfectly good solution.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is called rollout.io. Rollout.io.
Go Whis.
Whistler.
Calm down, Whis. Come in.
Sorry. Rollout.io. And when people first saw this, they thought it was a bit of a joke, because it does appear to be a bit implausible. But it's called Rollout.io, and its basic use is that you can hot patch bugs in production iOS apps that are already QA'd onto the App Store.
Wow.
Now, this doesn't seem likely to me, but because, you know, Apple are so aggressive about this stuff, they really, really don't like this kind of thing where you can change production code live. But from the FAQs, there's an FAQ in here that does ask the question, you know, what do Apple think of this? Where's it gone? Sorry. Does Apple approve of this? The way Rollout.io works does not alter binaries and does not inject brand new code, which is acceptable according to Apple's store guidelines. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know exactly how it works then. It's basically saying you can do things like try catch functions. It'll then show you the output of that and show you how and show you what's broken, for example, and then say you can replace parameters. So return values and input values, for example. You can turn on and off functions or UI elements, so you can hide stuff in your app.
Wow.
And then there's also think of the third party input changes. So it's quite interesting. I was quite surprised. I know that this is a big issue for app developers. App developers have a lot of problems with, you know, they've got a bug. It's a very minor bug, but it has ended up on the live app store. And then they have to wait, you know, God forbid, maybe 3 weeks to fix that if they're not prioritized, if they're not got a relationship with Apple.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just an interesting thing. But there was a lot of chatter on Twitter about, is this a joke? Is this really, does this really work? How can this possibly be, okay? So, but basically, it seems to tread the line between, you know, between making major changes with hot fixes, it says, and toggle on off features. So, let's say a certain new feature broke. It's a nice way to be able to then turn that off in your production app very quickly. And then you maybe have to wait the couple of, you know, the 5 days, the 10 days until the new version gets patched and put up.
Interesting.
So it's quite an interesting little piece of technology. And I know it's rolled in there with things like Ruby, but it's worth looking at. And the next thing that I found was a thing called Connect SDK. And this is for building...
Right up your street, this one.
Yeah, this is really interesting, actually. This is about building... And again, I wouldn't necessarily use this for the companies I work with, but I think if you're a startup and you want to create something quickly and hit a lot of platforms at once, this is really interesting. So this is one SDK for 6 TV platforms, which are WebOS, Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, and Amazon, and also LG TV, and it's LG who are funding the whole thing. But basically, they've open sourced this, and it looks like this is one of the first open source things LG have done.
Yeah, interesting.
And they've done it really well, and it's well documented, and some interesting how-tos and stuff on there. And it effectively allows you to build apps for all those boxes. So if you're looking to deliver content to Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, etc., it's a quick way to hit them all up to use HTML5, JavaScript, CSS to do that.
I think whether you get convergence, like in the terms of the platforms, or maybe that's one way, but this way clearly is another. You build a tool that allows you to, and you know, the purists might think that's not right, but hasn't software been doing this for years? I mean, basically all languages are compiled down to something else anyway.
Yes.
They compile down for different processors depending on, you know, blah blah blah, and machine code and so on and so forth. Mm. So even using, you know, scripting languages, PHP, Ruby, whatever, compiles down to something else. They're all interfaces to different platforms. So
yeah.
I wonder whether which way we'll go. Do you think we'll go to a convergence in terms of platform?
No.
Or do you think we'll go for more tools like this that allow you...
No, I think the platforms will continue to fracture. I think it's going to get worse, because I think it'll end up in the same way as TV stations or whatever. You're going to be picking your platform of choice, but the offerings on them are going to be pretty much similar. So you're going to say, okay, well, I used to buy a Sony TV, so I'm going to buy Sony set top box, or I'm going to buy I'm going to buy Roku because it's the cheapest and it gives me the most channels, or what, you know, whatever your particular choice is. But then eventually, I think all the channels and everything are going to converge. And possibly people like Apple, who are very locked down compared to the rest of them, it might be different. Maybe Apple's play in that space is going to be, you know, to open the App Store up, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, with the guys I work with, there was a bit of a sort of kerfuffle because we saw that Flickr had got a new app released, and in the on Apple TV, and we read that Flickr had been involved in developing this. Now, that's the first we'd ever heard of an external company being allowed to touch an Apple TV app. Before that, our understanding was that Apple had written everything for those companies.
Right, interesting.
So there does seem to be a start, you know, some sort of, you know, movement towards people being able to build stuff. And that means that there probably is an SDK for Apple TV. We just don't know about it. But anyway, all that aside, the other thing, the great thing that this Kinect SDK does is it has stuff like Dial and Apple and AirPlay built into it.
Right.
So,
okay.
So you can automatically. The idea is that you build these apps for these boxes, and you compile it, and it works on all of them. But then your mobile app, and this is why it's particularly interesting to mobile developers, your mobile app can broadcast to them.
Right. Okay.
And that's what's cool about it. So if you've got content that is locked down onto a mobile device, and the mobile is your market, but you want to allow people to view that on a bigger screen. You know, this is probably the quickest way to quickly hit the entire market. Maybe it's not your biggest. It's not that important to your core business, but you want to be able to exploit big screens in people's houses for some reason. This is a really quick way to get your mobile app broadcasting to those things.
Do you think there's any danger though, where if you're putting all your eggs in one basket with this kind of interface to these different platforms, that, you know, if LG decide not to develop this SDK, you're left with a product that you can't maintain because you've not actually been able to get at the native code for the platforms?
Yeah, that is a danger, obviously, and that's one of the big problems and one of the big criticisms of intermediary technologies, the things that sort of sit between the real platform and your code. So, example, Ruby Motion. Everyone says, well, what if Ruby Motion packed up shop tomorrow? Well, this is open source, and so is Ruby Motion. I think there's a fee for Ruby Motion, but they do have an open source version, I believe. I might be wrong. But, you know, these, I think actually there is a big distinction to be made there. If Ruby Motion is free, which I'm not sure it is, but if it is, then I think that sits in the I'm happy to use this camp. If with this SDK, it is definitely open, so I'm happy to use it. It's open source. Anyone can continue to build on it. So the worst thing that's going to happen is that I'm going to have to employ a developer to hack on the open source, you know, code base for this and make changes if I need to, if LG decide to abandon it. I'm not sure the same thing can be said for Ruby Motion. I'd have to look into it.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, no, it's obviously a space that you work in quite closely, but I also think it's a space that is going to see a lot of change just from chatting to you. And, you know, as more boxes seem to come out and more channels seem to be available, it's, obviously a burgeoning market. Now, you can...
Ruby Motion is only for sale, so I would be cautious about that.
£124.81.
Yes.
That was a guess. But anyways, yeah, well, there we go. Well, keep an eye on it, I'm sure. I'm sure you'll have another one of these next week as the market burgeon every so often. But
I do think that the most important thing is to get the idea to market. You know, when you talk to investors, the thing they say all the time is that, you know, ideas aren't worth anything.
Mm.
You know, you hear Gary Vee having a rant about that all the time. You know, ideas aren't worth, you know, anything, and it's doing that matters. And even if you've done it with this, they don't really care. They just want to see it working and see consumers excited about it.
Well, we've talked about that again before, you know, the developer's curse. It's you do everything yourself in bleeding edge technology, and it often never actually gets put out. I think my opinion has changed quite heavily on that. I think the techs, especially when you're doing smaller stuff, you know, over engineering at first isn't the key for me. It's like, yeah, you just get it out there, and you can always change it. But
indeed.
Brilliant. Well, there we go. Another one wrapped up. Episode 25, the Link special.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of banter. Not too much. Not too much. There may be more next time. You never know. But as always, we hope you enjoy it. We will be back. The next one will be a discussion show. Probably, we'll decide. We won't commit now to the topic. But we shall we'll be back. Episode 26, 25 plus 1. Yes, 26. And that should have been the third week of September. Thanks for your time, Kieran. As always, a pleasure to chat. If you have any feedback, you can find us on the Twitter @BackToFrontShow. somewhere on Facebook, Kieran, I'm sorry. And yeah, you can also email us via the website. Just look in the footer there. All right. Thanks ever so much. We'll be back soon. Cheers.
Cheers.